I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubblegum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello, and welcome back to a new year of the All Out of Bubblegum podcast. With me today, I have Marty.
Hello.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Thank you, you too.
And Brandon.
Hello, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And we're back, and we're kicking off the year the only correct way, with a new entry into our long-running Steven Seagal series. So please enjoy a secondary introduction, intro tune.
I'm going to take you to the bank, Senator Trent. To the blood bank.
I will snatch every motherfucker birthday.
What do you mean, we, what, what?
I'm going to fuck you up, ugly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, now you're going to be a good pussy.
It's like I'm only trying to fuck a football now, really.
I was not born on a fucking turnip truck, man.
Do you feel me? You can't stand to be near me. Hell, I come from a different place. My philosophy's from outer space.
Can I laugh in your face?
Ah, yes. So this time we are talking about the unequivocally the biggest hit of Steven Seagal's career, and the movie that Steven Seagal movie that even your mom will watch is Steven Seagal's Die Hard on a Boat Under Siege. And we've paired it with the Steven Seagal movie that nobody should watch. a late era DTV movie called Contract to Kill, which we'll get back to later. But first we have Under Siege. It's pretty big deal. Steven Seagal's highest grossing film, I believe, still, forever. I do not believe he's coming back.
Yeah.
I don't think he has his Top Gun Maverick in the barrel.
Under Siege 3, it could happen.
Yeah. Ryback, Under Siege.
Ryback is back.
Yeah, reteaming with Andy Davis for this one, director of Above the Law.
They're back together. I don't think it's controversial to say Andrew Davis probably the best director Steven Seagal ever worked with.
Aside from Steven Seagal himself, obviously.
Yeah, well, Andrew Davis runs a tight ship, and
hey-o.
He was didn't think about that, and he was on a rise when this was happening, still going on from Above the Law. We'd only really made one movie in between, and then running this one ended up giving him The Fugitive, of course, which is this really big break. And
wait,
he
made two, right? Oh no, wait.
No, Above the Law, and the package with Tommy Lee Jones. And he brought Tommy Lee Jones with him. And then after The Fugitive, he wasted his whole big break on making some incredible shitty comedy where Andy Garcia plays two parts and nobody remembers it.
Andy Garcia, comedy legend.
Yeah. Beloved comedian Andy Garcia.
Well, he also did A Perfect Murder, one of the better Hitchcock remakes. Quite a fun movie.
I think there's two good Hitchcock remakes, and they were both done by Alfred Hitchcock. this is Die Hard on a Boat, which is one of the first, maybe the first movie to really big hit to be like a Die Hard ripoff.
Nah, I can't think of anything earlier.
Die Hard 2, of course, which was also basically just Die Hard at an airport. But this is the first non-die-hard ripoff.
I think even Under Siege's, let me check, French title refers to Die Hard. Yeah, because Die Hard is called Piège de Cristal, and Under Siege is called Piège en Haute Mer.
Something by the sea.
So it's sort of similar. I think Piège means something like tower or something. So instead of Tower of Crystal, it was Tower
of the Sea
on the High Seas.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Oh, not Boat of
Crystal. Boat of Crystal.
No.
Well, there is really no broken glass in this. Except like the monitor he shoves.
Trap. It means Tommy trap. Jones through. Trap.
Trap. Wait, what means trap?
Piège.
Instead. Yeah, but instead of crystal or instead of tower or instead of boats or what?
No, okay, so Die Hard was called replacing? Piège de Cristal, so crystal trap.
Oh.
And this one is called Piège en Haute Mer, which is trap on high sea.
Oh.
On the high seas.
All right. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
All right.
And this is Steven Seagal's big pop blockbuster. If there was like a spectrum of Steven Seagal films of weirdness with like Attack Force on one end and like the totally most normal pop blockbuster on the other, Under Siege is his most normal movie, which is kind of weird because Gary Busey's in it and he plays a cross-dressing murderer, but it's still his most normal movie.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that you managed to, they get both like Gary Busey and Tommy Lee Jones given like this insane performance, and it's like, yeah, this is his most normal one, actually.
Yes, Tommy Lee Jones shows up as Mick Jagger, and Gary Busey is this murderous, cross-dressing... Well, he's Gary Busey. I mean, he's what you want to see from Gary Busey, and they definitely elevate the film because they just have so much fun playing their roles.
Yeah, and they're getting two villains to sort of counter the lack of charisma that Seagal has. And yeah, then they also just stuff him away in a meat locker for half the movie, so they could just let Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey be the focus.
Yes, it's great.
Which is probably another reason why it's like the most sort of accepted by the normies Steven Seagal movie.
But Steven Seagal, he's still a dick here. I mean, he's still like belittling the private, you know, character. Like, oh yeah, you got shit for brains, private. You know what they taught you in boot camp? Follow orders. And that's just, he's still an asshole, but I mean, it's still his most commercially accessible film.
Also, as a diehard ripoff, is this like technically a Christmas movie? It's never brought up, except they say in the start, like, oh, 50 years ago today, the Pearl Harbor was attacked, meaning this is set on the 7th and 8th of December.
Oh, I didn't think about that, but oh, Steven Seagal's done a Christmas film.
No, because it's never brought up again. It's just like it's said right at the start in the news report.
7th and 8th of December is not Christmas, though.
It's Christmas enough.
It's December.
You've started the countdown. You could be on the second Sunday of Advent by then. And I mean, the funeral at the end would be even a bit later, so even closer to Christmas.
Mm-hmm. True. Not a very Christmassy funeral, though.
They need the Christmas tree up and all that stuff.
Yeah, they drop the casket in the sea and then they pick a Christmas tree up and they set
They put the coffin under the mistletoe.
Steven Seagal kisses the corpse of the Leslie Nielsen lookalike.
He looks like a crossover between Leslie Nielsen and the Pet Cemetery guy. Yeah, it's also the first movie since his last Andrew Davis movie where Steven Seagal does not have a ponytail. I think we mentioned this before too, but it's like, also it's not allowed in the Navy to have a ponytail, so I think they just cut it.
Ah.
It's also one of his few films where he takes some damage. Andrew Davis managed to convince him to get nicked by a bullet during the submarine scene and get nicked by a knife during the awful knife fight with Tommy Lee Jones.
I don't know. I think he does that. It's more of that in the start.
Fair enough, yeah.
Maybe this was the last one. I mean, he got pretty fucked up in Above the Law.
Yeah. Also, Andrew Davis.
Maybe Andrew Davis just likes beating up Steven Seagal.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. Apparently, Andrew Davis said it like it was a very different working on this compared to Above the Law. And we're like, oh, yeah, on Above the Law, Steven Seagal was all like, he's willing to do whatever and he's a real pussycat. And now, when they met again on this one, it's like, no, he's a star now, and he knows it.
Hmm.
And that he wasn't really excited about working with him again on this, and he accepted it more to work with, like, the supporting actors.
Oh, okay.
Then it wasn't like, oh, yeah, I want to team up with Steven again. We had a great time.
No, I'd rather work with Gary Busey. Yeah. The Buse is loose.
Well, was this pre or post brain damage? And did it make much of a difference?
I really don't think it makes much of a difference. He was always a wild man. I think it was post-accident, yeah, but well, I'm not sure.
I have no idea. I always forget when this is always weird, but when he actually had his... knocked half his brain out.
Birth?
No, December 1988.
So it's Christmas.
Oh, that might be a great Christmas movie. The day Gary Busey lost half his brain.
But yeah, we got Steven Seagal, ex Navy SEAL, Casey Ryback, but we don't know this yet. He's just a cook, lowly cook. this ship, and he really wants to make a seafood stew,
bouillabaisse,
a soup. Yeah, a bouillabaisse for the captain's birthday, which is, it's really convenient that the captain's birthday is right at the same time that the ship is being decommissioned. Like, that's really lucky for the terrorists, that just really lined up for them.
Yeah.
Pretty convenient, but I'll excuse it.
Yeah, because that's how they get onto the boat and stuff.
Yeah.
They use everything. Oh, no, it's a surprise party, so we got to land this helicopter without him knowing.
Yeah, without the Leslie Nielsen character knowing, yeah.
Yeah, that guy's final movie, for the record.
Well, he did die.
His name's Patrick O'Neill. Yeah, they shot him.
Gary Busey caps him for real. Well, it checks. It tracks.
And yeah, so they're staging this party, and they fly in... Tommy Lee Jones undercover as a blues band.
Is blues that rock, yeah. It's, they're like something
the
I can't remember.
The Bale Jumpers.
That's it,
the
Bale Jumpers, yeah.
And I also bring along the most annoying character in maybe any Steven Seagal movie, Erica Alanica as Miss July 1989.
Oh, I thought she was alright.
Yeah, she was fine.
Such an annoying character. Makes no, just, she doesn't do anything, and just like a completely unearned love story at the end, and then somehow she's in uniform at, yeah, a funeral.
She's an honorary,
and they need a cutaway, yeah,
she's
shot,
an honorary seaman.
It was like, because they were like, the audience are gonna ask, like, why is the stripper not at the end? You gotta put a scene in of that. Yeah, she's obviously most famous for being on Baywatch, besides this, I think. I think she was in the original run? I think so. I think she's one of the original cast members. Maybe she quit Baywatch to do this.
I'd rather do a Steven Seagal film than do Baywatch.
You could probably do this movie on the off-season, but... Like, you do Baywatch in 89 and 91 and 92, and then you drop out to do this in 92 halfway. I don't know. If you're a huge Baywatch fan, write us an email. And tell us about that. Anyway, yeah, they're coming aboard to steal a bunch of tomahawks, right, and sell
nuclear
them.
Nuclear-tipped tomahawks.
They're basically... It's, but yeah, because it's still, it's diehard. It's like they pretend it's all like, oh, the revolution, and yeah, you're... I'm getting back at you for... Oh, yeah, because Tommy Lee Jones is kind of a psychopath ex-CIA operative. Mm-hmm. Emphasis on psychopath. Where he was also a psychopath when he worked for the CIA, but then they just gave him money because he was killing the right people until he stopped killing the right people. And then they were like, oh, shit, we should kill you. And that didn't work out. But yeah, now he's getting revenge, I guess, and he's pretending again, as in Die Hard, that it's, oh, it's all politically motivated, but no, he's just selling nuclear, he's just stealing nuclear missiles to sell them to the highest bidder.
Yeah, and the politics of this film are a lot more downplayed than in most Steven Seagal films of this time period. There's a little bit of stuff towards the end where Steven Seagal's like, oh, we're just puppets from the same puppet master. But that's it. I mean, that's it. That's the only real politics in the film. And it's just something that would make no sense if it wasn't Steven Seagal playing the role. But it's just, you know, the sensei injecting his little bit of, like, anti-authoritarian politics into the screenplay, or I don't know. It's a brief little moment. But for the most part, this is just a pop blockbuster.
Yeah, I mean, we hadn't really discovered all the real CIA, like, oh, we're funding the Al-Qaeda, pre-Al-Qaeda, that's what they're actually doing, and all that stuff yet, so it was like, oh, what's the worst the CIA's done? Oh, yeah, it turns out it's some pretty terrible shit.
Well, Iran-Contra already happened, though, right?
Yeah,
because, yeah, that's a very... That inspired both Above the Law and Die Hard 2. Mm-hmm. It's Iran Contra coded. if you prefer. Yeah, they take the ship, I guess, and then Steven Seagal's pies get burned because that sailor won't even listen to him about the pies. That's a real shame. Those look like some nice meringue pies.
Steven Seagal making them cream pies for the seamen. No, and he's offloading the missiles onto Tommy Lee Jones's onto a submarine that he also stole from the North Koreans without anybody noticing.
That makes less sense. I don't understand. He pretended to sink a submarine and then stole it somehow, and now he has Murdoch from MacGyver, right, driving it up to him. That's why I need Brenton here today to talk about MacGyver. Because I think I saw this movie like 6 times before I noticed that that's the same actor.
Oh.
Because he has no close-ups at all in this movie. He's just like, he's only on the submarine. Got it like maybe 2 lines. And now no close-ups, and then he just gets blown up with the rest of the submarine. Yeah, he played a recurring character of MacGyver. For those that don't know, Murdoch was MacGyver's nemesis from like season 2 to 7, I think.
Mm.
And he was a hitman, and then every time he at the end of every episode he died, but at the end of every next episode, it was like, oh no, actually, he survived.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was fun for like the first 4 times, and then it was like, oh, this is like really lazy and a crutch that you just keep bringing back every season now. Because you don't have any better ideas. Because they really killed him off. They killed him off, I think, in like season 4, and it felt like, oh yeah, this was satisfactory. And then they were like, ah ha ha, he's back. And I was like, oh, fuck.
No, he's like, yeah. He's like the Kenny of MacGyver.
Yeah.
I guess. He's actually a singer. I don't know why I keep going on about this guy.
Does he do any singing in Under Siege, though?
No, but he toured with like Power Station when Robert Palmer was unavailable. And I think he could have become like the lead singer of Queen after Freddie Mercury died, but then he was like, Feels really, that doesn't feel like what you should, doesn't feel like you should just be like trying to continue when your lead singer died.
And I'd rather do Under Siege. Okay.
And then they took a break, and now they're back touring with some other guy.
Yeah, Adam Lambert.
Anyway, that's been your Michael Desperay update. No, okay.
But yeah, the cast for this one is amazing. Because we got Kane Hodder, George Chung, Bernie Casey.
Where is Kane Hodder? Do you see him? Or do you have you just read his name?
No, I saw him.
All right.
He's one of the... So there's that bit where...
He's one of the goons.
Yeah. Obviously. Seagal takes out the five guys on the deck. They come running out, and Seagal just snaps the neck of the last one and shoots the other ones.
That's like every scene. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how little that narrows it down?
Okay.
I believe you.
But I think I know what you mean. Like before I'm he blows sure up I've the helicopter.
Him. Sorry, what?
Before he blows up the helicopter.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think I know where you mean. Yeah, obviously, didn't notice George Chung, legendary bad guy. We talked about him a lot last year on the Shannon Lee double, I think, where he turned up in everything.
No, Rapid Fire Showdown in Little Tokyo, I think.
Oh, yeah. Was he not also in the... Shannon Lee, a lot of slow motion guns movie. The other one, High Voltage. He played the...
The Vietnamese Mafia. The
Vietnamese Mafia guy. He turns up in everything.
Yeah.
Legendary guy. Yeah, Bernie Casey. Not a big enough part. We got Cole Meany from Star Trek's in here. Pretty big part. Raymond Cruz.
Yeah.
Just a great cast. A lot of actors. So he blows up everything.
So what did you think of the action?
The action's good. It's just... This is the first movie which sort of strays away from the original the OG Steven Seagal formula, where he's no longer breaking bones and stealing bats and using like whatever he can find. He just one scene. We get one like classic Seagal scene in the makeshift metal lab that they set up or whatever. When he gets to cut some guys with a knife and gets to saw a dude in the shoulder, and it's like, yeah, good shit, old school quality Seagal stuff.
Yeah.
But this is like, it's the first movie where he sort of moves into more just guns and explosions.
Mm-hmm.
Especially explosions.
Yes.
I don't think he ever, can't remember if he, like his car got blew up in Marked for Death, but he didn't really like stage explosions and use bombs before in the same way that he's going to start doing going forward.
Yeah.
So this really is, it's sort of the end of the OG Seagal formula.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
It's sad.
He blows up the submarine in a great scene that is only missing Back in Black by AC/DC when they bring up the old World War II veteran to help load the guns. You know, we need some Back in Black in there. Like, Back in Black, hit the sack. It's like the old guy loads the gun. That's just me.
Well, it's not even... That's true. It's not even Steven Seagal, like, blowing up the submarine. He just reads the coordinates. So he's like, further, go left, aim left.
But he does get a good knife fight at the end, you know? I mean, I'm not convinced that Tommy Lee Jones and Steven Seagal ever had their knives touch. I'm not convinced of that. But there's some good sound effects, you know, some... ding, 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 and then they just... They never touch knives, though, but it made me laugh.
Yeah, I think my favorite part of the knife fight is that he just grabs the knife. It's the Tommy Lee Jones' knife with his knife. Takes it out of him. But then he just starts speaking again. You never see him get rid of the knife. He just starts speaking, and they're like, oh, yeah, the knife. He just... spat it out off screen, didn't make a sound or whatever.
That's how tough he is.
Also, is this the first film where he's trying on like a southern accent or whatever? He's trying like he's there's not no reference to Italy or Asia in this movie from Steven Seagal's point.
No,
and I feel this is the first time he's sort of floating his makeshift New Orleans accent. I could be wrong on that.
You could be right.
He also impersonates one of the other guys with an accent.
Mm-hmm. Which accent is that?
Good question, Brandon.
It's definitely Chicago by way of Detroit. No, I have no clue.
I'm just gonna say Southern.
Southern, yes. It's Atlanta by way of Mobile.
Yeah. Also, I love how after he's been hooked, I guess, while trying to sabotage the submarine the first time, he just gets to wear like a hoodie. It makes him look like your dirtbag stepdad. It's such a stupid look. And also, just like when they're, going to take down Tommy Lee Jones at the end, sieging the captain's room or whatever the steering place, whatever the fuck that room is called, where he's hiding out.
It's a navigation room?
Makeshift HQ. I don't know. It might be called that. He's just holding his gun so weirdly when it's going around the corner. like he's doing like belay or some shit.
Yeah, he's the OG, original gangster.
This is set on the USS Missouri, which is a real boat, I'm guessing, for you military historian.
Well, I think during the end credits, don't they say it was actually filmed aboard some other ship or something like that?
It's filmed on board the USS
Alabama. Okay, yeah, yeah. But yeah.
Which is a boat I think they let more people shoot on.
Literally.
It's also the same where they shot the Cher music video for If I Could Turn Back Time.
Okay, I gotcha.
So I think it's a boat. That's a ship that they lend out to productions more, and that because the Missouri is like a real historic ship. That's a big deal, yeah. And they're like, yeah, maybe don't film. We're not making a movie.
Yeah, that's where the end of World War II was signed. The finale of World War II. So they're not going to allow like Steven Seagal and Gary Busey to like mess that up. So they used a different ship.
Yeah, oh, that's why it's such a big deal that it's like being retired, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah. And I think...
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say, I think the video at the beginning said that the first American shots of the Persian Gulf War were fired by the Missouri or something like that, making it also somewhat significant, but I don't know if it really matters too much to the plot.
I kind of doubt that. Yeah, but it's got some good gnarly. I love the bit when he's when the gnarly kills, when he drops the sort of railing piece through the guy.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of dumb because that guy's just like standing right underneath it. And he's like, oh whatever, but you get a really cool shot of like going through the floor and blood just gushing out.
And Steven Seagal also rips out somebody's throat. It's not as gruesome as it could have been, but it's a brief little shot of him tearing out somebody's esophagus, which is good. I mean, it's good to see Steven Seagal doing that.
Yeah, I've forgotten about that. That's true, and it's like, it sounds cooler on paper than it looks in the movie. It's sort of the unfortunate thing. It's like, oh yeah, you get Steven Seagal ripping a guy's throat, and that should be like, yeah, that should be like the greatest moment of all time. And it's just kind of like, it just looks like he just sort of scraped some skin off his throat.
It's just totally grazed over, the whole incident. Like, totally forgotten about as soon as the knife fight with Tommy Lee Jones begins. It's just glossed over, but it shouldn't be. I mean, it's Steven Seagal ripping somebody's throat out. I don't understand.
Get some more blood in there and
the have blood hose.
Like, really rip it out. Yeah, I think this is my first time watching this in like a really long time, actually. It's become one of those like, oh, it's on TV movies for me, where it's just like, it's going to be on television like 7 times a year, and you're just catching it there, and you just watch whatever's left of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's more...
It's become a real kind of like, often when I'm in a hotel, I'll just be like scrolling through, and it's like, oh, Under Siege is on. I guess it's been off like 30 minutes. We'll watch the rest of it, whatever.
Yeah, it's more accessible than, like, Submerged or something like that. I mean, it's just a movie you can sit down and watch. It's kind of fun. It's not a dirge like some of Steven Seagal's movies. You have the fun little bit where, like, Voodoo Child's Slight Return by the Jimi Hendrix Experience starts playing you a little bit. The so it's just kind of like a, it's like a fun blockbuster. It's not like, you could cast like anybody in the Steven Seagal role for the most part, and it would make total sense.
I also like that they use the music choices to show how badass the bad guys are.
Yes. It's like, I'm rooting for those guys.
They have the cool soundtrack. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, while Steven Seagal is just some stuffy cook doing salutes at his boss's funeral. But Tommy Lee Jones and Gary Busey, they got the badass Jimi Hendrix music. I'm rooting for them. Blow up Honolulu, please.
Yeah. What good has Hawaii ever done for the rest of
the world? One of the bullshit states, like Alaska and Minnesota.
Yeah, I guess any final thoughts on Under Siege?
It's not my favorite Steven Seagal movie, but I enjoy this one a lot. It's definitely up there for me. When we do the power rankings at the end, it'll probably be pretty high up there, but it's not as good as Marked for Death. But this is Steven Seagal at his glossiest and slickest, so it's fun.
Yeah, I really liked it too. It was a lot more violent than I remembered. I also think that this might have been my second favorite had he not teamed up with a bunch of old dudes.
Oh, I think of like his first 8 solo projects, this is my least favorite. Just because it's too slick. I'm sorry, this isn't... I want garbage. Mr.
Seagal. Just wait for the next film, okay? Contract to Kill, and you'll have your garbage.
Well, that's too much garbage. No, but just we've left the kind of...
The gritty stuff. Like I said, like
the OG formula, and then the other... The next 3 solo projects give me more of the Steven Seagal bullshit. Like, especially on Deadly Ground and Glimmer Man, just sort of like that uncut Steven Seagal input is there. But then we get to Fire Down Below, and that's
too much garbage, too much trash.
Well, it's just on Deadly Ground at like 0.5 speed. God.
Yeah.
That's all discussions for the future. So I guess those are the final words on Under Siege. And we can move on to the real pie de resistance of this week. 2016's Contract to Kill.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, now some of you might be confused by that. If you're going by the order things are listed on Letterboxd, Cartels, or Killing Salazar, as it's both known as, I guess, should be next. Because it's listed there as 2017, but we're going by the IMDb running order of things, and their Contract to Kill is listed as being released. The next one released came out in December 2016. I have to be honest, I wasn't paying super hard attention to Steven Seagal releases at this time, so. I did not attend the premiere of the film.
Don't worry, neither did Steven Seagal.
It's what IMDb says, and that's the list we've chosen to follow. And that goes their China Salesman, and then Contract to Kill. So that's what we have on the agenda here today. This is our first Keone Waxman film, first of many. If you're not familiar with him, speaking of Honolulu, that's where he's from.
I knew the new. Yeah, he's went in.
there would have been no Steven Seagal DTV era. Because, yeah, Keone Waxman is, he's a Hawaiian director. He did Sweepers with Dolph Lundgren for New Image, I think, back in, like, the 90s. And then nothing really before he suddenly picked up a Steven Seagal DTV movie and then just became, like, Steven Seagal's guy for a while. They did, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 movies together, and he directed most of the first season of the Steven Seagal TV show, I think.
True Justice.
Yeah, he directed, like, a lot of the first season, maybe some of the second season. Still haven't figured out how we're incorporating True Justice into this podcast series, to be honest. We'll get to it. He's also done some other, like, he did Hard Way with Michael J. White, and I want to say Luke Goss. Could be wrong about that. Maybe that guy from The Expendables, the shitty actor with the big ears. Randy Couture. He might have been in that. And he also did what's it called, Hunt to Kill, which I think was Stone Cold Steve Austin and Danny Trejo? Gary Daniels and Eric Roberts. No Danny Trejo.
This is the one movie he isn't.
Well, good that Eric Roberts is there. If one of them isn't in Eric, then.
Yeah, and I remember that one being fun, even. Hunt to Kill.
Looking at it, it is his highest-rated movie on IMDb, except something that came out last year called The Modelizer, which is a romantic comedy starring Byron Mann.
And written by Byron Mann.
Ooh. Mm. Well, I guess that's how you get your own romantic leads.
Yeah.
Steven Seagal does it that way.
Holy shit. And there's a... I'm just checking it now. There's a Dutch woman called Celinda Schoenmaker in there, who's from the same town as I am.
Oh.
Holy shit.
Wow, that's incredible. What a coincidence.
Bring her on the pod.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to talk to you about your work on The Modelizer. That's the name of the movie. I didn't know if I said that earlier.
You did.
Yeah. Okay. As you can tell, we're very excited to talk about Contract. Yeah, and Contract to Kill, I guess, is the final movie they made together then? Because it's our first. Yeah. But also, it's impossible. They made 3 movies together in 2016. And so, who the fuck can tell what was shot when?
Nobody knows, not even the editor.
Especially Steven Seagal.
He's out of it.
Because their 2015 movie, Mercenary Absolution, comes with a director's commentary on the Blu-ray. And you know I've bought it for that. So when we get to that in a couple of months, we'll get some insights. But right now, obviously, I don't know. Obviously, you can't also have been like, oh, yeah, I'm going to dedicate this director's commentary track to differentiate between the next 3 movies I'm going to make and when they're going to be shot. But we have to assume this is the final movie they made together. 9 movie run from 2009 to 2016 only, actually. So that's more than a movie a year.
Well, they look like they were shot in like 5 days.
No, because the first couple ones are pre-goatee.
Before the goatee period, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I can tell you're not a true Seagal scholar. You have to know that there's pre-True Justice, there's no goatee. The goatee arrives after True Justice. It's a watershed moment.
Sorry.
But that's how you can tell them apart. I think, but it's, we haven't reached post. No, post. There is no post goatee. There's a pre goatee. We haven't reached pre goatee era yet. but I think there's gonna be. We're just gonna. At a certain, we're gonna be on a run of Keone Waxman movies going forward in this series. Like, you guys are gonna get real, real familiar with. Holy fuck, Steven Seagal made so many movies in 2016. How is this possible? He's 7 movies he released in 2016 alone. I think 2 of them he's not the lead in, but sort of. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of Keone Waxman once we get through 2016, I guess, which is what we're going to be doing for the rest of this year, looking at how many movies there are. Yeah, but I guess Contract to Kill.
It's pretty bad.
And we say that, and we liked it significantly more than Martin.
Well, I rated it very low because what the fuck else was I going to do?
I mean, there is...
It's not like you guys liked it.
Yeah.
I don't like it, but the thing with... It's like, compared to the non-Keone Waxman movies, Keone Waxman is like... annoyingly competent in that he's not a great action director or anything, but it just his Steven Seagal movies just look slightly more like a functional DTV action movie than Steven Seagal's other DTV action movies,
like China Salesman or something like that,
or General Commander.
Okay,
yeah,
and just the
but this,
yeah,
this movie is really bad though. it's not
good.
I laughed a couple of times, so I got some enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, the opening scenes kind of got my hopes up. Like the split-second shot of Steven Seagal walking through the cartel tunnel with like the 1950s rear projection, like technology. Like I was like, whoa, this is going to be really laughably terrible, isn't it? No, it just turns out to be regular terrible.
Yeah, I was laughing a lot at that. It looks like one of those... TikTok edits when they're like putting something in, someone into like wrestling or someone into like a soccer clip or whatever. That's what it looks like. Like it looks like Steven Seagal running and they just put in a fake background or whatever.
But it doesn't even look like Steven Seagal running. It looks like Steven Seagal standing still and the background moving as though he's running.
Yes.
Yes.
The projected background.
That's exactly it. The person... in the football clip is running, but Steven Seagal was standing still, and they put him into the TikTok, and it looks really unnatural in that way. And it's hilarious, but it's like for 2 seconds, and nothing makes sense. This movie's so fucking overplotted. Yes.
Also, the background is a green night vision background, and Steven Seagal isn't in night vision. Everything about it is shit. But now, even before that scene, we have the real opening scene of the movie where two, we are later told, Turkish heroin dealers walk out of a Mexican heroin dealer's house in Turkey, in Istanbul, and they're saying stuff like, oh, he wouldn't get away with this. Maybe he got away with this in Mexico, but not here in Eastern Europe. I have never heard anybody refer to Turkey as Eastern Europe. I mean, technically, it's to the east.
Kind of Southern Europe, Southeastern Europe. But yeah, I know what you're saying. It was just such a weird line of dialogue.
Yeah. And then...
it's Western Asia.
Yeah. They want to get away with this in Western Asia.
But then the cartel, the Mexican cartel, shoots them. And then they put like calling cards on their bodies, which never comes back in the movie. No. And also, like, why? Like that you shot them in your own driveway. I think people are gonna be able to figure out that you shot them.
But somehow it's also like the best action scene in the movie because they seem to be using like blanks and squibs for this one scene.
Yes. Except every choice that was made outside of that, storytelling wise, makes no sense.
Yes, they can't even keep track of like the terrorist organization that the Mexican cartels are trying to fund. It's like this opening exposition scene is like all the Islamic fundamentalist terrorist organizations are getting together. Al-Qaeda and Hamas and the PLO and Hezbollah and Daesh and the Taliban and Boko Haram. They're all getting together to fund, being funded by this Mexican cartel. And then it like changes names like throughout the entire film. Like, oh, they're funding, they're being funded by Daesh. Then like the next second it's like, they're being funded by, I don't even know. It doesn't make any sense. The plot is just a mess. It's awful. And like they lay down this huge exposition dump in like the first like 10 minutes where they discuss like in just ridiculous detail like how these Mexican cartels are helping smuggle in these Islamic fundamentalist terrorist groups into the United States, and it's boring.
Oh, you mean Steven Seagal's interrogation scene?
Yes, yes. It's awful.
Steven Seagal, the best interrogator ever, because he knows everything before he asks questions.
Yeah, it's like, why did he interrogate that guy in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, this is like, this is just trademark DTV era Steven Seagal stuff. Just like, how much plot can you put into something that doesn't need it and just make it all about every imaginable government agency? Like he is a DEA CIA agent, and then he recruits his old flame, who's an FBI agent, who's young enough to be his granddaughter, and they have zero chemistry.
But they do have sex.
Steven Seagal gets to squeeze the boob of a that does happen in this movie.
It's awful. It's horrifying. But it's probably one of the highlights of the film. As horrifying as it is.
Yeah, and then they...
That body double has the most charisma of anybody in this movie.
That's not... It's not true. Because you got Russell Wong. I was happy to see Russell Wong in this.
Yeah.
Even though... I didn't even understand. He recruits his FBI ex-girlfriend or whatever, and then just drive into the forest, and then a fucking drone comes flying, holding a machine gun like it's a person or whatever. It's like, I don't think this is how armed drones work. And then it shoots at the lady's car, and her trunk explodes.
And the person driving the drone, Russell Wong, is just right there next to them, like 2 feet away, and they're like, where is this drone coming from? Is it coming from over there?
Yeah, and the student's goes like, some nice flying you did there. Might have a job for you. And then it cuts to a plane. And I was hoping it was like Russell Wong was going to fly the plane. And then they were going to be like, that's the same thing as flying a drone. But unfortunately, they're not that dumb.
Also because he is the worst drone operative ever.
Really? Yeah, like they just saw it. They noticed him right there. But Steven Seagal is just like, no, let him shoot your car.
I'm pretty sure they just got lucky they didn't accidentally hire like a 12-year-old in the park.
Yeah, I don't want to imagine Steven Seagal with a 12-year-old.
Yeah, on the plane, Steven Seagal explains the situation and what's going on. And he says, it's like a monkey trying to fuck a football. And that's what it's like. A really... famous phrase we all know and love. And he also says, yeah, it's kind of very distinct, you know, which is like the least distinct way of saying something. It's like, could you make it vaguer, Steven?
That's right after he says like, oh, we don't care what their religion is or their ethnicity, we just like killing people. It's just such a weird line.
Yeah, and well, then they go to Istanbul to spy on a Hezbollah leader who's doing a drug deal with a Mexican, I think. And then their whole plan is to just make the Mexican, who's Russian for some reason. I cannot understand anything about this movie. But it's like they got to make them not trust each other, but they need to make... Because the Hezbollah guy is playing like big, but he really needs the deal to happen. So they need the Mexican guy to start distrusting him to create some kind of rift between them.
It's Yojimbo all over again.
Yeah, and so then it's like, oh yeah, the guy, the Mexican drug dealer... who's Russian again. I don't understand anything.
I'm pretty sure they shot this in Bulgaria and just cast locals and like, okay, so you're playing a Turkish dude, you're playing a Russian, you two guys, you are definitely Mexicans visiting a brothel. Go.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, he's really into classical cars. And then so Steven Seagal steals one of his cars, which I'm going to say it doesn't look very nice for like, I thought if a guy would collect the classical cars would have a bit better looking cars. It's like, this was the best they could find. It looks okay.
Also, we see the bad guys noticing it has been stolen. And then later on in the movie, they're like, oh, we didn't know it was stolen. And also, it's the most noticeable car ever, and nobody notices it.
Well, no, the Hezbollah guy notices it, because that's the point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
Like, oh, the tail. And then Steven Seagal, he's just like a voice modifier or whatever to call the Mexican drug lord and pretend to be the Hezbollah guy and be like, why are you following me? Oh, yeah, and at some point, Crimean plane was shot down over Syria. And this is a... It's a big plot point. Again, this is so trademark, late era Steven Seagal. Like, who gives a shit? There's no need to have a plane being shot down over Syria to be involved here, but it's just in there because, oh, international intrigue, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that ties into anything, but it was a nice explosion.
Weren't they saying that, like, the surprise bad guy at the end was on board the plane when it blew up? And he was the one that blew it up?
Yeah. There's like a surprise bad guy who blew up the plane, but why does he need to have blown up the plane? Why can't he just be all the bad guy? Like, why does there have to be another international intrigue plot tied to him for some reason that doesn't actually tie into anything else other than, oh, that guy did it?
Yeah. And Steven Seagal respects him for it.
Yeah, well, so then after Steven Seagal squeezes the boob, they kidnap that lady, and he and Russell Wong just kind of drive to where it is. Steven Seagal has an epiphany about where they are, and he mumbles about, like, oh, yeah, it's so obvious, it was this all the time, and, you know, to go where you want to go, you got to go back to where you started, and then they just, like, drive to the Palace of Terror. And they drive there, and they shoot all the bad guys. And
then the bad guys they were originally chasing arrive there too, after they arrive there and killed all the bad guys. Like, it makes no sense.
But we get a bit where Russell Wong shoots a guy with a shotgun, and he flies into the windshield of a car. And I was like, that was a bit cool.
That was too cool for this movie.
That was the one... It was like the one time Keone Waxman used his juice on his production.
Yeah. So cool, I almost woke up.
And just what a weird-ass ending where, again, Steven Seagal just mumbles a bunch, and then he goes quiet for 2 minutes, and then he goes, but first I need a car. And then it's a shot of him driving the yellow car from earlier.
Then,
like, this has any meaning.
I don't understand that at all. It's just, first I need a car.
No, because he's talking about something about, like, the necessity of like people like himself. But then he just stays quiet for 2 minutes. He says nothing. And then he's like, but first I need a car.
It's probably the most memorable line of the film.
What? It is, because it's so baffling. It's like, what do you need a car for? What the fuck are you talking about?
Usually, like, when you say something like, first, I need a blank, usually there's, like, secondly, thirdly, but no, that's just the end of the movie. Credits roll, first, I need a car. Then credits roll, contract to kill.
Or, like, you say something that you're going to do, and then you qualify it, but you need a car. But we don't even know what the fuck you're going to do, Steven Seagal.
But do you actually expect Steven Seagal to walk?
Well, I don't expect him to run, that's for sure.
Of course he needs... No. Though we do actually see Steven walking up steps in this.
Holy shit!
So we paid him extra for that.
Yeah.
He kicks over a table at one point. Like, wow, this guy's really exerting himself.
Yeah. If you walk up these steps, you get to touch your boot. Come on, Steven.
I don't blame the actress at all for hiring a body double. At least that's what IMDb says. I mean, it could be anything. They're just making shit up at this point. Like, Steven Seagal, oh yeah, yeah, he had a body double in 99% of this movie.
Just paid him Big Macs again. Whatever movie that was. That
Salesman? I can't remember.
Any final thoughts on Contract to Kill? A movie just, it's got nothing. it's just like,
why would
overplotted nonsense.
There's no reason to watch it.
And
but Russell Wong plays genuinely the worst drone operative ever.
That's worth watching it for. You know, he kind of he draws
the one time.
Yeah.
The one time they go on a mission and he has to use the drone, he just flies it in front of the fucking window where the bad guy can see it. Though luckily, the guy then says, hey, I saw a drone. And the other guy's like, ah, don't worry about it. It's probably nothing. We're only criminals engaging in illegal activity. Why would there be a drone outside?
Yeah.
And then he's on like an open floor of a hotel, a couple floors up. And he lands the drone in the parking lot where the bad guys can see it. What a fucking idiot. And then he gets caught. No shit. What was his plan? Just land the drone in the parking lot, then take the stairs down, and half an hour later pick up the drone?
Oh, God. I don't even know. There's not much going for this film. I mean, it's not as bad as it could have been, but there's just not many positives to it, except for the final line of the film. It's just trash.
I think the problem is that it's not as bad as it could have been.
I mean, yeah.
Because it's not bad enough to be, like, memorable for being some kind of weird disaster.
Yeah, it's not Attack Force. It's just kind of a weird bar.
It's not even China Salesman.
No, it's better than China Salesman, but this film is still awful.
Yeah, but it's not as weird as China Salesman.
That's true.
It's just kind of bland. Nothing.
Yeah. Even the fights are kind of boring. You do the stereotypical move where he, like, bends the guy's fingers back, like, half a degree of an angle and just, like, punches somebody repeatedly. It's the same stuff we've seen, like, 1,000 times in a Steven Seagal film.
Yeah, but that's the good stuff, though. When he breaks stuff, breaks bones, bends arms.
Yeah. But it's the stuff we've seen a billion times.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've had my final word on... Fuck, what's it called? Jesus. That's how memorable it is.
Yeah. Steven Seagal mumbles the movie.
Mumblecore Steven Seagal. I'd watch that, but I wouldn't like it, but I'd watch it.
If you choose to watch this, put subtitles on there or something, because...
I did not have subtitles.
There were a few subtitles on the version I watched for, like, when people were speaking English. Like, the very first line of the movie when, like, the Turkish heroin dealers are walking away, they're like, that's bullshit. There's, like, subtitles, like, if you can't understand a Turkish accent, here's the subtitles.
If you can't understand this Bulgarian doing a Turkish accent.
Yeah, which maybe that's a good idea. I don't know.
All right, I guess I'm supposed to try to fit these two into a power ranking. Want me to remind you of how it goes?
Yes, please.
Marked for Death, number one. Out for Justice, Above the Law. Hard to Kill, Attrition, Beyond the Law, or General Commander, China Salesman. So where would you want to put Under Siege, Marty? We can start with you.
Jesus, that ranking is so different from on how I would rank them.
Above or below Hard to Kill?
Yeah, Hard to Kill is my number one.
So below Hard to Kill for you?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, on this power ranking list, I'd probably put it at number two beneath Marked for Death and above Out for Justice.
Well, I'm going to side with Marty. You said below Hard to Kill.
All right, fair enough.
So that's where it's going. But of course, Marty wouldn't. That would be Marty's number one and number two. Probably.
I would put it above Marked for Death, though. So
no, man, so messed up.
Let's put it.
This makes sense.
Ah, fuck! Do what you want, Stein.
Yeah, Under Hard to Kill. That's where it's going now. Because that's how it arbitrarily the system works. Is that you think Hard to Kill is better, even though you think Hard to Kill should be three places higher, but all right, Contract to Kill. Do we start at the bottom or at like above or beyond Beyond the Law? One of you didn't see Beyond the Law. Who was that?
Me.
You didn't see it.
No.
So Brandon,
it's probably the
Contract to Kill above or beyond, above or below Beyond the Law.
I'd probably put this so far as the best of the DTV films we've seen, which I know that sounds weird, but they're all pretty awful so far. So maybe above Beyond the Law.
Yeah, the thing is, I completely agree with that. This is a very easy power ranking. I don't know, where do you stand, Marty? Above or below General Commander? Your vote has nothing to say.
I'd say below.
Below General Commander.
And above China Salesman.
All right. Well, we're not. That's not happening. Unfortunately, no. It's number 7 instead. Oh, maybe it should be Beyond the Law. I'm in doubt. I was the heaviest defender of Beyond the Law, and it's not even. It's just in a chair the whole time. No, not enough Seagal. It goes in atop. It's the new power rank. There's a single movie separating Under Siege and Contract
Holy
to Kill.
Shit! Oh no. What is that film? Attrition.
I actually gave Attrition a higher rating than Under Siege, but I'm not going to try to push Attrition higher in the ranking than Under Siege.
No.
If that would be insane.
We would riot.
It does have more of that Steven Seagal magic input that I was missing. All right. Let me quickly pull up here so I can see what the next double feature would be. Next time we return with the Prom Queen. Next time on the Steven Seagal Above and Beyond the Law, we will return with the Prom Queen itself on Deadly Ground and Cartels/Killing Salazar, the Keone Waxman movie that some people say was released after Contract to Kill, but we have trusted a different source and say it came out slightly before. So,
looking forward to
this. Yeah. Those are some
things. They exist.
One of those is great. I've seen both of them, and one of them.
Want to find out which one?
Yeah, tune in whenever we return. Yeah, meanwhile, you can find us on, you can go to alloutofbubblegum.com and you can find everything else there. Links to Discord, links to Patreon, links to whatever. I don't know if there's more than those two things. Other than that, we'll catch you next week.
All right.
See you then.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's like a monkey trying to fuck a football now, really. This whole thing, it's just a fucking mess.
Flavor. You like that?